Whether they live outside or inside, all cats need parasite protection. NexGard Combo, Esofoxaleniner, Ipratropium, and Praziquantel Topical Solution is the first and only broad-spectrum parasiticide for cats that protects against fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, and treats and controls roundworms, hookworms, and tapeworms. Take protection to the next level with this easy-to-apply, one-and-done protection. Use with caution in cats with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Digestive side effects have also been reported.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. By the way, did you know that we are now voted the number three most popular veterinary podcast out there? So thank you to our listeners and to our guests for making the show as amazing and fun as it is. We've gotten so many messages from you that we're touted as the podcast on the way to work or the way home from work. And that's what we love because it's not a long one. It's just a right niche for you guys. So thank you so much for tuning in. And, you know, to continue keeping that momentum going, is a wonderful colleague of ours that's in this profession, a veterinary practice manager down in Miami, and it's Lazaro Lopez in the house. How's it going, Lazaro?
It's going well, Dr. Christman. Thank you for having me, and congratulations on that podcast ranking.
Well, listen, we set the bar very high, so don't screw it up, Lazaro.
I'll set the tone. That's all right.
No, so, you know, to the listeners, by the way, if you have great stories to share with me, please reach out with us here at DVM 360. Send us a message on Instagram. And what I love to do is I will literally scroll and look for wonderful colleagues doing great work in the profession. And Lazaro is one of those that has a great energy. And the listeners, you're going to really learn a lot from him. And I'm curious, going along for the ride with you all, to the listeners, about his story. Because I told him, I want to go into this blind learning more about you. Because I think it really sheds that authenticity when we have these conversations. And I really want to get into it too, because I really want to hear your story. What first drew you to veterinary medicine, and how did your career path lead you to where you are today as a successful practice manager?
I've always had a connection with animals. Growing up, my family had all kinds of pets. I had dogs and fish, chickens. I think at one point we had a pig and a goat. And that really shaped my appreciation for their care and well-being. But my path into vet med wasn't linear. I think my first decade in employment was in hospitality, and that taught me a lot of lessons in service and teamwork and inevitably leadership. From there, I worked in human healthcare. And at that time, I was also stepping into the animal world on the side. I knew where my interests lay. I started working with wildlife, exotics, and large predators, which that was pretty cool at that point. When I transitioned fully into vet med, I started in emergency and critical care. I had some incredible doctors, colleagues who set the tone for me in my early experiences. Emergency medicine honestly feels like a trial by fire sometimes. And I appreciated that. I appreciated the high intensity and the high stakes. Over the years, I expanded into specialty medicine. I worked in exotics, ophthalmology, orthopedics. And that gave me a broad perspective on patient care, on how different veterinary teams operate. Eventually, I stepped into leadership. I helped open and manage a couple new practices. I later oversaw multiple markets for a national mobile veterinary practice. And now as a practice manager, I get to blend my love for animals with my passion for building strong, high-functioning teams.
Okay, there's a lot to unpack here because I love this. Yeah. You just did your whole life story. And let's admit it. So you currently live in Miami, Florida, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Where are you originally from there?
Yes. I mean, I wasn't born here, but I came here as a baby. So it's the same thing to me.
Okay, awesome. And I love that you came from the human side of hospitality. Do you see a lot of parallels between the human hospitality and veterinary hospitality?
Oh, absolutely. We're in a field where I think we all hear at different points, like how nice it must be that you work with animals rather than people. But every single challenge I dealt with in human healthcare, I deal with here.
And what I love about your story already is that, and this happens to a lot of the guests, I say the same thing, and I love this, is that you always had a love for animals. It was always there. And, you know, you go into the human aspect of things, but then you circle back to your passion, which is, it sounds like it's this profession.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Honestly, when I look back at it, it just feels like different chapters building upon themselves and then kind of coming together.
Yeah. And multiple different chapters in veterinary medicine, from critical care, working in exotics, and now you're in the practice management and leadership role. And let's chat a little bit more about the leadership role, because you're really known for building strong teams and fostering a great workplace culture. Because I know this, because you're the owner. To the listeners, this is what I love going to conferences, because correct me if I'm wrong, your owner, is it one of the owners or one owner? I forget who
The primary
Dr.
doctor at our practice, Dr. Carlos Canino.
Yeah, it's got to give him a shout out, because he sat in one of my lectures and he told me how amazing you are with building and fostering a workplace culture. So what's your secret?
I would say the biggest thing is leading by example. I never ask anyone on my team to do something I wouldn't do myself. And if they see me jumping in to help with patients or supporting them through a tough case, it sets a tone. The second thing would be trust. I trust my team to be capable and I make sure they know that. Giving ownership over the roles while being available to support them creates confidence and accountability. A big part of that, I would say, is creating an environment where people feel comfortable in coming to me with mistakes or concerns, because we're all people. And most of the time, it's not necessarily the mistake, but how it's handled.
Yeah, I'm thinking, because you mentioned trust, and I call it the T word, because it's a very sensitive, tough word to get from employees and coworkers. And the fact that you give them their autonomy to you empower them to let them make the decisions on their own with feeling like big brothers watching over them is one of the key aspects, I think, of a successful leader. And the fact that you just said too, like, if they make mistakes, at the end of the day, we own it. We try to figure out how to move on. So, bravo to you on that. And how I'm curious also to how do you create that environment where your team feels supported, and also, I call it the M word, motivated.
Starts with staying calm, because usually when you're tested is when things get a little chaos in the mix kind of deal. And veterinary medicine is unpredictable. If leadership panics, the whole team kind of feels it. I feel it's a point to have that steady hand and stay adaptable in real time to ensure my team knows they can rely on me. But beyond that, I prioritize clear communication. In the emergency, everyone needs to know their role and what's expected of them. I also focus on anticipating problems before they escalate, whether that means stepping in to help or adjusting schedules or reallocating resources on the fly. At the end of the day, leadership is about creating stability, even in chaos. So if my team knows I have their back, they can focus on providing the best care for our patients.
Let me tell you, I mean, we all know, listeners tuning in, it's hard to almost stay calm with some of the craziness that can happen throughout the day, whether it be personality differences between clients and the staff, within the staff, and then of course our patients too. We have emergencies that happen throughout. So I like that you try to lead by example by setting that calmness. It's really crucial. I love that. And even on the toughest days, where do you lean into when you realize you yourself, Lazaro, I mean, you've got stuff going on in your own personal life. So how do kind of set that aside and become the great, strong leader that you are at the practice?
Lots of days you start with a nice deep breath,
That's nothing wrong with
depending on
that.
what's going on. Honestly, at this point, I mean, I'm not a young buck like that. I feel like there's a few lessons learned in the journey to get here. So I don't let things get to me. Like, we'll find the solution, we'll find our way through, and that's what I hold paramount.
Yeah, and meditation's a huge thing. Taking a big breath and listening to some good music on the way to work. And there was a clinic at Tracy Sands. If you're listening, I really thank you for this. And she's in Pennsylvania, and she calls it a Red Dragon Day. And sometimes we have so much going on in our personal life, that whether it be the kids or significant others, and you try to set that aside. But sometimes she'll say, like, listen, I'm coming into work, I have a Red Dragon Day, meaning like, I got stuff going on at home. I'm going to be okay. I'll do my job today, but I don't want you to feel like, it's somebody else that's causing the issue here at work. I got some stuff going on. And I think that transparency is really nice about that, because life can be tough, right?
Absolutely. And then it's communication. And that
Yeah.
kind of lets everybody know where you stand. Because otherwise, they're like, what's going on with Laz? They're
Right.
trying to kind of compensate in some way. And rather, if we're all clear as to where someone stands for the day, let's focus on what needs to be done and move forward.
Bingo. Absolutely. And one thing that you and I have a huge passion for, we share, is the power of networking. I say to this the audience when I'm giving these talks about it, is that your network is your net worth. And networking isn't always the first thing people associate with veterinary medicine, but I know you're a big believer in it. So how has networking shaped your career, and what advice do you have for those tuning in looking to build strong industry connections?
Well, networking has been huge for me. And the reason I say that is in South Florida, the veterinary world is honestly just it's small. You either cross paths with, the same people over and over again, or you know of each other. The people of merit, you've been in the field for a little bit. Some of my biggest career opportunities have been because of the relationships I've built and staying in touch with colleagues and being open to collaboration. Obviously your work ethic speaks for itself, and I've been fortunate to have colleagues recognize that and keep me in mind for opportunities. But my advice would be don't wait until you need something to start networking. Get involved in industry groups, attend conferences, obviously, look at us here. And engage with your peers. Even just reaching out to someone for insight or mentorship can open doors. Relationships in this field are everything. The more you invest in them, the more opportunities will come your way.
Yes. In fact, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. It's something that I've been working a lot with the vet students is teaching them how to network at conferences. It's something that I wasn't taught when I was in vet school. You're so busy working on your classes. But when they're coming to the conferences, I want to show them how to network and give them examples of what it is, because it's so powerful. As it's they're going to be spending the rest of their careers at conferences and continuing education. But those relationships that you build through your networking are so strong, like you're talking about. Do you think that that's a good idea for them and vet students, vet tech students out there?
Oh, absolutely. And it isn't just like the schmoozing and the getting to know each other. Like I'm using South Florida as a reference, but we all know who to refer to for a certain specialty or a certain need. So you're building on that throughout the year, in between the conferences, in between, these kind of events. So you build that trust with each other. You build that camaraderie, even if you're not in the same facility. That's quite helpful.
Yeah. And another thing I'm just so proud of you is that you're really big into the Latinx profession. And as a Latinx professional in this field, has your background like influenced how you approach leadership, mentorship, or even the way you connect with clients?
Absolutely. Representation and inclusivity matter. Not
Yes.
just being in the room, but making sure others feel seen, heard, valued. Miami is a melting pot. We have a diverse community. Everybody knows Cuban or Colombian and Venezuelan, but we have Russian, we have Brazilian. And while many of these communities speak Spanish, phrasing, expressions, and even cultural approaches to veterinary medicine can vary widely. One of the biggest takeaways has been recognizing the importance of communication and bedside manner in these cultural crosspoints. For example, discussing sterilization with an owner who sees it as emasculating requires a different approach than speaking with someone who views it as preventative care, or navigating end-of-life conversations in a culture where euthanasia is considered taboo. I once had a client wrestling with the idea of approving a life-saving splenectomy, not because of financial concerns or medical concerns, but because the Anglo doctor's professional slash formal demeanor didn't feel warm or relatable. Nuances matter. That was an early life lesson in this field for me. The confidence in the medical professional goes a long way. So as a leader, I make it a priority to mentor and uplift others, especially those from diverse backgrounds, whether it's guiding up-and-coming veterinary professionals or making sure Spanish-speaking clients feel understood. I see it as a part of my responsibility. Diversity strengthens our industry, and I want to be part of that positive change.
I just want to give you a hug right there. That's so powerful, Lazaro. It really is. And I got to tell you, I talked to a lot of our colleagues that are in the Latinx community in veterinary medicine, are so passionate about their culture, which I love. And the fact that building cultural competency for the clientele is so passionate and important to them, as well as to their colleagues that maybe are not of the Latinx community. And I just think what you're doing is phenomenal. My hat's off to you and your hospital for that. Because we know veterinary medicine serves such diverse communities. And I know you touched upon this a little bit, but tell me a little bit more on how you and your team make sure your clinic is welcoming and accessible, especially for the Spanish-speaking pet parents.
I'd say it starts with language access. Miami, as I mentioned earlier, has a lot of different communities down here. And I've worked at different areas of Miami over the years where I may have to be more focused on a Russian community or a Brazilian Portuguese speaking community, let alone the always present Spanish speaking community in Miami. So language access is where you start. Having Spanish speaking team members is almost a requirement in Miami, not just in vet med. But beyond that, being mindful of cultural differences in pet care. And then one thing I would say is that we've leaned into is like real-time translator apps. Those have been invaluable, and especially for Portuguese or Russian communities, because that we don't have as many employees that get to speak those.
Would you guys, do you guys use like a Google Translator for
That's
that?
my default. It's pretty quick.
Yeah, that's good to know. I was just thinking of other ones that might be out there. If anybody has any other ones that they recommend, that'd be great. But yeah, that's awesome. And you know, you work in a very busy practice, and you know, what are some real practical ways you've worked to create a culture that supports your team and keeps the morale high?
I mean, burnout is very much an all-present topic in vet med, and that happens when you feel unsupported and undervalued or overwhelmed. My job is to make sure that team feels the opposite. I would say we focus on manageable workloads, team collaboration, and honestly having open conversations about stress. If someone's struggling, I try and adjust schedules or redistribute cases. I encourage real breaks, like step away, recharge, and not feel guilty about it. But most importantly, I make sure my team knows they're appreciated. Sometimes it's something small, like bringing in food, or other times it's just recognizing their hard work. A simple, I see you and I appreciate what you do can go a long way.
I like that you say that. I see you, because we want to be seen, especially if we're having tough times. Sometimes you don't feel like it's being noticeable, or whatever, you know, or we hide it very well. And you know, the three words, "How are you?" can go a really long way as well to pull them aside and just like have a little one-on-one and chat with them, like you're doing okay. I like that a lot. That's helpful. And you know, you have few doctors, technicians, you got staff, you have multiple personalities that are there and that are working together. So what's your approach to keeping communication strong and, you know, making sure that everyone stays on the same page?
That very much falls on me because every team member is different and a one size fits all approach is not going to work. There's always a learning curve. I tailor communication based on how each person best receives information. Some prefer direct conversations while others do better with written updates like an email or a text. I do very informal touch bases. And like I said, that may work for some and not for others. You learn your way through. But the point being is to hold regular check-ins to make sure everyone is aligned and encourage open feedback, whether it's about workflow or schedules or team dynamics. Clear communication keeps things running smoothly and helps prevent misunderstandings.
It's great. It really is. And I love that you have this open door policy, it sounds like, too, to chat with you, because you're leading by example. You're in the trenches with them. You get them. You understand them. That all speaks to your authenticity and your character, which is great. You know, character is what I always would say. So I define it as, you know, character is what somebody says when you're not in a room. You know, like that's the how they describe you. You know, and I always say I want to be that person that, you know, I think I said this on another podcast, so I always want to be known as like, you know, where did Adam go? If you're at it like a party versus like, oh, thank God Adam's gone. You know, you want to be part of you know, the conversation, the morale, and all of that. So it's important. And you know, what's one thing about working in veterinary medicine that you think people inside or even outside the industry often misunderstand?
We kind of touched on this briefly earlier, but it's not just about loving the animals, it's about people too. Every case we handle involves a pet and an owner, and navigating that human element is just as important as the medical expertise. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of us hear about how nice it is to work with people, but all the challenges I dealt with in human healthcare, I deal with here because a human being brought that pet over. A human being is invested in what's going on with their family member. Beyond that, I'd say it's a field that requires resilience. There's so much passion in veterinary medicine, but there's also emotional and physical tolls. People see the cute puppies and the kittens, but they don't always see the long hours or the tough cases or the emotional weight we carry. It isn't easy managing a difficult medical case or an end-of-life visit. You will inevitably be pulled into that family's emotional process. Again, this is your family member. So to then have to kind of hit an internal reset of sorts and walk into a new puppy appointment with a smile on your face as if you had it just been dragged through your own emotional turmoil and then rinse and repeat of sorts, it can stack up very quickly.
Yeah, I really can. And you know, for Anyone looking to step into a leadership role in veterinary practice, especially those from diverse backgrounds, what would be like the best piece of advice you'd give them?
Own your experience. Don't be afraid to take up space. Leadership isn't about a title. It's about showing up, learning, making an impact. I'd say seek membership, build relationships, and always be willing to grow. The industry needs diverse voices, and if you're willing to step up, you can make a real difference.
I've been in practices where there were employees that have worked at that hospital for several years, and they feel, I don't want to say the word entitled, but they feel it's a responsibility for them to kind of go up into a management role when they're not actually a good manager. You know, they may be good at what they do as a job, but because they feel that they've been there for X amount of years, that they can be put into this management role. And I feel that that can really do damage because they want the title, like you said, but maybe don't really can walk the walk, if you will.
Of course.
Yeah, I've seen that. And yeah, so it's not one of the best things out there. And I do see that a lot in veterinary medicine. And if somebody does get a role over somebody else because of seniority, there's a little bit of hesitation or backlash that happens. And we need to get away from that. I mean, they earned that role for a reason, whoever selected them to be in that position. So, by the way, before we wrap up too, I want to ask you this. Do you get applicants that say they want to enter veterinary medicine because they don't like people? Is that still a thing?
I wouldn't say it's a frequent thing, but it definitely gets touched on.
And to me, that's a deal breaker on my end. What are your thoughts on it?
I think they're in for a reality check because it's you're dealing with people from the onset all the way through.
I love applicants that are people obsessed. Just as much as they are about animal obsessed, they need to be obsessed with clients and communication. And it's so important as we progress this industry. And speaking of looking ahead, what changes or innovations would you love to see in veterinary medicine, especially when it comes to leadership, culture, and diversity that we're just talking about?
I'd like to see a stronger emphasis on leadership development within vet med. I say too often, like great clinical skills, which are absolutely important, are prioritized over great leadership skills, but we need both for long-term success. And I hope to see more initiatives focus on diversity, because not just in hiring and mentorship and career growth and making veterinary care accessible to all communities.
Yes, to all communities. Because again, representation matters. I know clients want to see themselves with who they have or who they're seeing as a veterinary professional too. They feel more comfortable. They can do more business that way. That's what it's all about. I mean, it's most of my clients that I had were of the LGBTQ plus community because they felt that they can have this connection with me, and I appreciated that. And I'm sure the same is for you in the Latinx community. So I think that's so powerful. And yes, we need more of that representation in vet med. And I think we're working on it to the listeners. I feel like we're getting there, but we can absolutely do better in veterinary medicine for sure. So it's come a long way even over the past 10 years. So excellent. Okay, my last question for you is, what are you watching? Any good show recommendations? What are you watching on TV? You know, Netflix, Hulu.
I am midway through Severance.
Oh,
It's a little mind-boggling, and I'm appreciating it, but it's also a vibe, and I'm not
yeah, it
always
is a
there.
vibe.
So I also am currently watching the current season of Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, so am I, Lazaro. I watched both, by the way. And you know, Severance is fantastic, and I agree. You have to have the headspace for that because you have to really think. You can't be on your phone watching this show. You have to really be invested. Severance makes me realize, like, I don't think I'm as bright as I am because I don't pick up all the subtle cues, and I have to watch it like a recap the next day. But I absolutely love the show, and yeah, The Handmaid's Tale. I mean, such great acting is so good. So excellent.
Neither of them are background noise, I'll tell you that.
They're intense. Those are intense shows for sure. So, but great television. Where can we learn more about your hospital? Let's give it a shout out.
That's Doral Veterinary Care in Miami, Florida. So it's an easy Google. I believe we're doralveterinarycare.com.
That's it. There it
Absolutely.
is. Lazaro Lopez, thank you so much for being on the show and all the great work that you're doing, my friend.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Christopher.
My pleasure. Thank you for everyone for tuning in. Don't forget to rate the podcast as we continue to grow. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Say that five times fast. I keep saying it so many times. Bye, everybody.
you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.